All right. Welcome, everyone, to Reality
Love
Rules
Talk
Survivor
Radio.
Recap.
Reality Rules.
All right, everyone.
What's going on? It's Reality Rules, coming to you live from Conroe, Texas. It's the Survivor Recap episode, hosted by Andrew Gibson and produced by Mama S. Tonight's episode is brought to you by the hearing aid company, saying they helped Keith when he got home, so in the future he won't be running into blocks. Let's get started tonight with the Reality Rules.
All right, everyone, welcome to Reality Rules Survivor Recap. This is Travis Rindler filling in for Andrew while he is on vacation. I'm also here with my co-host for the night, Cody James.
Hey, everybody.
Say hi, Cody.
Hey, everybody.
All right. So we are new to this, but we're excited, and this was an amazing episode. But before we dive into it, we're just going to do a little quick recap of things that went down last week. So last week's episode was pretty big in two different ways. It started off with a huge shocker. Do you remember that sad expression on Terry Dietz's face when he knew that he had to step out of the game? It was just a very, very tragic situation, and he definitely seemed like a front runner to win things, wouldn't you say?
I definitely think he made the right decision by stepping out because family's more important than the game.
Exactly. I mean, no one can really imagine what it would be like to be in that situation. I know that he fiercely wanted to be back on the show and was fighting hard and adapting to, you know, try to win this game. So it was really a big blow, a huge tragedy, and I think it's really going to impact a lot of people's games. And we also saw a kind of bizarre shuffle happen in the last episode. And that kind of led to the downfall of Wu and in some regards, Savage. Things went down at camp, and they thought they had an easy target with Spencer. But Savage got a little sloppy with the game plan and basically told everyone to vote for Spencer, but say to Spencer that they were voting Sierra. This is kind of when, you know, Sierra snaps into game mode, and she's not about to have that. So things happen. You throw in a little bit of Chaos Cast, add a little bit of Abby Marie in there, and boom, you had a huge mixture for a complete blindside, and it left Wu speechless and, you know, Savage kind of fuming. And that's basically where we pick up for this week's episode. So, you know, Cody, what were your thoughts here when, you know, this episode started and we kind of see the Takeo camp, you know, the night after?
Well, you know, you see Savage come in and he, you know, looks defeated because he thought clearly that Spencer was going, and that just affects the way he's going to play and the way he's going to act around camp. I think that's really going to hurt his game.
Yeah, it was weird to see him kind of go into this, like, groveling mode or something. You know, he said that was out of his character. And then they also showed this little kind of clip of him, like, you know, really losing it, kind of throwing some F-bombs and stuff. And that seemed kind of out of his normal character, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, but you also saw him, he was prepared, like, to use a different strategy. He was going to basically play possum, in my mind. He was going to act dead and be a vote for them if that's what they needed. So he seems adaptable, though.
Yeah, and I think that's what he knew he needed to be. But it was kind of weird how the exchange went down, because he kind of was, like, groveling at first, but then it seemed like the whole conclusion was that they were just going to be, like, a tight unit, and that they were this new happy family or something. And I think it would have been really interesting to see what would have happened if there wasn't this surprise merge. So let's talk about it. Merge at 13. What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, it brings a, like, that just changes your whole strategy because there's so many more, like, so much more room for error. Because if you tell somebody something, they could tell another person, and that completely can ruin your whole game. So you have to keep who you're working with and that a secret and kind of keep everybody loyal and not running their mouth.
Exactly. And, you know, a cast of this caliber merging at 13, the first time ever in Survivor history, is really something to watch. And I think we got to see that in this spectacular episode. I mean, it was unbelievable. But before we dive into all of that, let's talk about the difference between, you know, a Survivor game where you merge with a large group, like a, you know, a 12 or now even a 13 person merge, versus a merge where you merge with, you know, 10 or 9 or even like 8 in Thailand. You know, what's the difference between the two, you know, vast number gaps there?
Well, I think the difference is that you have time, more time with, you know, a select few of people that you're on a tribe with. So you grow more bonds, but there's been so many switches this season. Everybody's had to make a lot of relationships. So the 13-person merge, everybody has a relationship with everybody. Now it's going to come down to picking sides.
Right. And Stephen Fishbot kind of touched on this earlier in the episode where he said, you know, you just need 7. You need 7 for this vote. And then that kind of was a theme throughout the Tribal Council and even the rest of the episode that, you know, people might be looking at it just in terms of a vote right now rather than, you know, a really locked, solid group of people. Do you think that came about because of the, you know, huge merge number, or do you think that's just kind of the way this game is beginning to evolve?
I think because there's, so, you know, like they're past players and they know what's going on, that it was just, we need to get past this week and the next week, and 7 can get us, you know, that much further. If we just stick together for this vote, you know, a couple weeks down the line, we figure out what we're going to do.
Right. So we have this merge feast with 13 people, and I felt, I don't know if it was just me, but did you guys feel like it was fairly candid in terms of people openly talking about, you know, things that had just recently gone down in terms of, you know, tribal councils and who voted what and what was being said?
I think that's a big part of the strategy. You know, you kind of want to, you don't want to say it behind people's back. You'd rather just say it out in the open so that everybody can get the exact story and it's not a telephone game of, well, this happened and this happened. You want to lay it all out when everybody's there and nobody's running around. So I liked it.
Oh, it was great. And, you know, as an orger, you know, I think we've had the opportunity to play in games that have had huge merges. You know, I think I've even potentially played in a game with like 17 people at merge. And, you know, as someone who plays online games and you've got this cast who really understands the strategy of it, I think it was interesting to watch and compare it because I do see a lot of similarities in, you know, online reality games in terms of how people react at a merge. It's either A, you know, you've already got who you have and you're locked and you're just trying to get that majority. And that's usually what happens when you merge with less numbers. But in this larger situation and with all of these different switches and shuffles, it has created so many layers, and it seems like everyone's really scrambling. And you see that in online games where there's a lot of shuffles and there's a big cast.
Exactly, but and the thing is, like, you know, with the big numbers, you know, people are preaching, you know, we need 7, but there was 9 people, you know, that were in this that were willing to vote the same way. How do you keep yourself within the 5 of that 9? make sure you're not, you know, on the outs when it comes down to nine. That's another part of what you have to think about.
Exactly. And it comes back to this question of whether or not this is just a one-round vote, or are you really trying to lock up your solid alliance? And, you know, what do you think about that? Do you think there are truly solid alliances that are formed right now? And how big do you think they are?
I don't think that anyone is making their game one-dimensional. I think everybody is trying to keep their options open. But at the same time, I think they're trying to put people next in line so that, like, they're not the next ones in line. They're always keeping themselves in a good spot and keeping someone ahead of them.
So how does one go about doing that with a cast of so many amazing players?
I think that you just be seen with the people you're working with, and you don't go off and try to talk to other people as much, because that's just going to put a target on your back and people that are in the minority. What are they trying to
pull? So do you think with this cast that we're looking with right now, like, do you think it's going to start to develop into these more core alliances and bonds and a little bit more isolation? Or do you think you're going to see all these people continuing to talk to each other? It seems like everyone's very open and talking with one another right now.
Well, I mean, that's part of the game is social, but I don't know, unless you're trying to make a big move, is the only reason you would go off and be seen with anybody else. I think if you're just trying to get through until you can figure out a different plan, you're going to stick with the people who are in the majority.
Right.
It's similar, similar to where Boston Rob, you know, he made his people sleep with him, eat with him at the same time. He kept his people on lock, and they were never allowed to go off on their own because he didn't want anything going down behind his back. And that's the strategy I see that somebody should use.
Yeah. Okay. I can see that on some level. I also think that it's going to be really important to be fluid with these big numbers now. You know, it's an end game. It's not about the battle. It's about the war. And I think with so many people, you know, it's just a matter of how can it advance you to the next round, because as we see, things can change so quickly in this game. So it looks like Jen O on Twitter wants to know why it is so important to make a big move versus just like going with the flow. So do you want to answer that first, Cody? Why is it so important to make a big move?
I mean, big moves will set you up down the line, but it's all about timing on that move. So going with the flow for now is what gets you further, then that's what you should do until you can make that big move. Because
I tend to agree that in terms of, this is definitely like an all-stars cast, and they have – the whole theme is this redemption and second chance and learning from your mistakes. So, you know, you have to earn it. This isn't just going to be like given to somebody. And so it's going to be about what you can say you did specifically at the end of the game that got you there and ultimately deserves you to win. But going with the flow at certain times, like you were saying, is important because you can't always be making the biggest moves, or else you're going to really have some obstacles overcome throughout the game in terms of, you know, dodging that target. All right. Well, thank you, Jen, for the question. Cody, talk a little bit about what happened right after this merge feast. You know, they're in this shelter and Fishbot gives this elaborate pro on who knows what exactly. And everyone kind of rolling their eyes, but Cass is kind of being perceptive and seeing this like guy thing form it, this, you know, the original Bion kind of clicking together. And even though she's technically a part of that, she, you know, wants to do her own thing. So she approaches Cass and, or, I mean, she approaches Tasha and, you know, tell me a little bit about what that interaction was like from a viewer's point.
From a viewer's point, you saw Cass, you know, she screwed Tasha over in her previous season. So I think going to her first and trying to get information was very bad for her game because Tasha, like, this is second chances. You're not going to make the same mistake twice. She trusted, you know, once shy, twice bitten. So.
Yeah, and to compare it to an org, it's very rare at this day and age that you get to play in one where you don't know anybody. Everyone is fresh, and everybody doesn't know anybody. You know, everyone is a fresh start. That's just really unheard of almost. And so we have the opportunity to watch a season where these people have, you know, watched each other before. There's definitely a viewer audience in online games, you know, and have actually played with each other before. And that, you know, always is resurfacing its head in online games. Your past comes back to haunt you. Do you agree?
I mean, yeah, if you try to play the same thing that you did, but if you're someone like Spencer who claims to have matured and he seems to be playing a lot better, I think a second chance at playing a better game is what he needs.
Yeah, absolutely. So, go ahead. What were you saying?
And you know, he keeps saying he's matured as a person, but all I see is maturity as a player. He realizes that you can't make someone do something they don't want. If you have an emotional bond with them, it's going to be easier to sway their opinion as if just you're someone who is trying to make that move and needs them as a number. And that's what I'm seeing out of his game the most,
yeah,
is that he's going for the emotions and trying to humanize himself to these people.
Right. So, you know, Cass approached things with Tasha. She kind of fluffed her off. And then it seems like all hell broke loose. What would you describe this interaction that Cass had with the original Bion members?
Her, like, the biggest mistake that's been in the game so far. When you know that, you know, the Bion has numbers, I don't, to go to someone and try to break that up instead of maybe just latch on and go with the flow until you can make a move, I think that was a mistake. And we saw it with Tasha. You know, they drew the line in the sand. It was like, you want one-on-one, let's go.
Yeah, it's what's worked for her in the past on many levels, but it's also, you know, very divisive, and we're talking once again about that flexibility, and when you have so many shuffles,
hi, caller,
it's hard to know. It's hard to know exactly where you stand.
Okay, we're going to go to commercial break.
All right. Well, we'll be back in just a minute, guys, with some more discussion on this week's episode.
Cool. Hello.
Introducing a new Big Brother game with some old challenges.
Mixed in with a few new ones. Big Brother Scream will take you on a journey through horror movies and television.
Oh, my God. Hello?
Introducing a new Big Brother game with some old challenges mixed in with a few new ones.
Yeah, this is Patrick.
Big Brother Scream will take you on a
Hi.
Journey through horror movies and television.
Can
TV,
you hear me?
Along with some twists and
yes.
turns that could turn this
game I don't know how this works.
Down. Hold on
well,
to
I'll just lead you through it when we start back here.
You will enter.
Okay, I didn't know like how to like put myself in the queue, but I figured it out.
Alive. Crown the winner.
Do you guys
know
like
that you... called in and stuff.
By Ryan Barker and
well, I told Cody, but I didn't tell Susan. I didn't hear her voice, so I didn't know.
On Facebook.
I can't look at my
chat. Barker, Big Brother Scream.
I'm sorry, I was
you
on
guys...
mute. I had another caller insisting something else. I put him on hold, but you can go straight to him now. Go ahead.
him now. So.
So we have right. caller Patrick on the line.
Welcome,
Hello.
Patrick. You have a
Hi.
Question for Reality Rules this evening.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, before I ask my question, I want to start it off by. When you guys do this, do you go in like, order of the episode? Because I've been listening from the start, but, like, I have a question, but it mainly pertains more to something at the end of the episode, and I don't want to overstep.
Oh, go ahead. We're just bouncing all around.
Okay, well, so, and I know that nothing's been said upon it yet as far as within the episode, but with Sierra voting for Savage at the end, do you think that was strategically to send Cass home without backstabbing Cass herself, or what do you think that was about? Because it looked to me that she was trying to send a message to Savage.
Yeah, I think that there's a little bit of that. I also think there's a sense of realization that came to Sierra during the tribal council that, the plan I thought so smugly was going to work isn't going to work. And so it's like, do I go down with this sinking ship and get clumped into that group? Or do I just say to the whole group, I do what I want to do, kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they kind of put this emphasis on, like, the girl power and let's try and get Spencer and Joe. But it seems like, for the most part, everybody kind of went with that overwhelming majority. And it really kind of speaks to, like, okay, people are there to play, but I feel like nobody's there to have each other's back. And in an all-star season like this, everybody seems to care more about just getting themselves one step further than protecting an ally.
Yeah, I'm definitely seeing that. Hey, Patrick, we just got a question. You want to help us answer it? It is, how do these people, I'm assuming the contestants on the show, have a pre-made alliance if they, you know, were picked by America? Do you want to dabble in on what you think?
Sure. Well, if you watch the press before Cambodia came out, there was actually a YouTube video that was linked out, and it was something that was very shocking to see because it's not something that, like, Survivor's ever really shown before. They had all the players kind of, like, talking with the press, and they were discussing pre-made alliances. And everybody was basically like, oh, I don't have any pre-made alliances. I'm just getting vibes from people. And Jeff Varner, who has a big mouth, was actually, like, talking to the press and was telling them, oh, yeah, we had conference calls, me, Terry, Kelly Wigglesworth, and Varner, Kelly Wigglesworth, Shane, who did not make it on the season, Vitas,
right.
and Terry. And apparently they all had, like, this pre-made group that they had made before the season started. Clearly none of that worked out, because I don't think any of them are left in the game except for Wigglesworth. And then he said on the other token, he also had a big pre-made alliance with PG, Kelly Wentworth, Shireen, and Spencer. But, I mean, I think
right.
that it was all kind of preconceived. I mean, there's no way to guarantee who's going to get on. But I think they all had a pretty good idea. I mean, like, people like Spencer were definitely going to get on. People like Joe and Shireen, who were in the most recent season. Like, I think that it was kind of like, you know, you take your chances, and if your friends get on there, you have a better shot. But at the same time, none of these preconceived alliances seem to have held any merit within the actual game itself.
Right. And, you know, just like what's been happening within the org community in the last few years, people are starting to meet up and hang out, interact a lot after these games. I mean, it happens naturally, even just online and through Facebook and Pro Board. But I know that that has to happen after these games are done. You know, they have to have gone through this crazy experience together, and they want to click up with other people who have also gone through something like that. All right. Well, thank you, Pat. We are going to do a few other little things here real fast, but thanks for your call.
All right. Thanks, guys.
No problem, man. We
Later.
Have Josh on Twitter who has asked, what's so bad about playing for yourself? At least they were honest and admitting it. And I have to say, that's true. You know, like, that, what Sierra said at that tribal council was 100% valid. She seemed a little panicky when she was saying it, but that is what you're doing. Everyone there is playing for $1 million. One person wins. So what do you think?
Yeah, correct. But there's, you know, you have to work with people to get to a, like, get further in a game to a point where you can start thinking about playing for yourself. If you start playing for yourself too early on, people are going to find that it's hard and aggressive, and you're going to be targeted, just like Sierra is now.
Exactly.
If you're not a team player, then you're showing you can't be trusted.
So we've got one more question. Username asks, was Cass the best way to go, or shouldn't they have kept the unlikable? This is something that always is the battle, I feel like, that I am on the losing side of. But I agree, get rid of the unlikables and stuff. I don't want to be there with them. I want to win against the best when I'm playing. I want to play against the people that have the best chance of winning. And if I can win that game, then I know I won the best. But I also know that's pretty bad survivor strategy. So, you know, what are your thoughts on, you know, should they have kept Cass?
Someone with the name Chaos Cass, I would target early because she's such a good speaker. And, you know, she could potentially swing votes that you thought you had just by pulling them aside and talking to them and finding out in that he was against them. She is a wild card. I think that hinders strong players' games, and I would have done the same exact thing.
Absolutely. Cass would have been mine too, but I did kind of see Savage's points about Sierra, and I think Sierra just kind of proved him right in her vote. She's, you know, she is going to do whatever she thinks she needs to do for herself. And that's going to be a huge liability because that's a little unpredictable. You know, we're running a little low on time here towards the end, but I wanted to talk about this vote split. Did you think that was outrageous, or was that just me?
To get 9 people out of 13 to agree to do something and to split it like that, that was pretty insane to me, because there's so many things that could go wrong with such big numbers. It took a lot of trust in those 9 to vote how they said they were going to vote.
Yeah, I just didn't think the math on it worked. I feel like if you're going to split, you need to have, you know, a little bit more substantial majority. I know 9-4 does seem like a huge majority, but it was really cutting it close. I mean, they had an opportunity to pull somebody, but I think the thing that worked against them is even if they did pull someone for that one vote and they pulled it off, then they still only have 5 versus potentially 8. And then they're going to have a really rough time continuing along with that strategy.
And another thing is, like, they brought up the split because Jeremy was worried about an idol, which I think is brilliant because he has one in his pocket. So he's placing the doubt everywhere else. Could they have it? Could they, you know, he was to bring that
exactly.
up. And
yep.
It was very smart.
Nor did Kelly. You know, she... Right. Could have done something big, but this was definitely not the round for her. Let's quickly go through here and talk about some of the characters, and then we'll pick our player of the week. But I wanted to start off by talking about Abby this episode. You know, pretty non-existent. You have gotten so accustomed to seeing her loud mouth and, you know, her opinions, and kind of almost grown to love them, but now this was like a very quiet episode for her. And I know you wanted to say something about Kelly Wigglesworth.
Yeah, well, to touch on Abby before, I think, you know, she was loudmouthed and she realized that put a target on her 4 times, you know, pre-merge. So she kind of just sat back and let people put their foot in their mouth so that she wasn't the easiest target to pick off because she's probably the most hated. And
all right.
Kelly Wigglesworth, wait.
Yeah, go ahead. Finish up what you're saying.
The thing with Kelly Wigglesworth is I don't.
All right. Well, we're going to go real fast into one last question we have. Jaden James wrote in, and he's asking about Fishbox edit. He wants to know if this is the most odd edit that we've seen in years. And, you know, it's definitely up there. You know, I think, you know, some of the odder edits go early, and he's continuing to make it pretty far. But at the same time, it's not all that unexpected from what we got from Fishbot the first time. What do you think? I think we might have lost Cody. So I guess we'll just kind of wrap up the episode with who is the player of the week. And we were really, really struggling with this because there were three kind of contenders in our mind. But we narrowed it down, and I feel fairly confident about this. We're going with Joe. We went with Joe because he's managed to avoid tribal council up to this moment, and even at this tribal council, he is yet again safe. He dominated in the challenge. He looked like he could have gone quite a bit longer, and instead of necessarily kind of being a target, he was, you know, sought after. So I think Joe is doing pretty well for himself right now. So kudos to Joe this week. And, you know, big things in store for next week. It looks like a big move is underway. Lots of shifty eye cuts in the preview for next week. So it should be a great episode. Andrew is actually going to continue be on vacation, so you will likely be back here a week from today with Cody James and myself again. We want to thank you guys all for tuning in, and we had a blast, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. See you guys next week, same time, same place. Take care.